This is Good Together, the podcast that inspires you to create positive change in the world every day by being a conscious consumer. I'm your host, Laura Alexander Wittig, founder of Brightly.eco, and I started this podcast a few years ago because I wanted a place to talk about the gray areas around sustainability and how being a conscious consumer can be challenging and confusing, but it's totally doable. So join me in the name of reducing waste and living positively in the name of the planet. Hey, Good Together listeners, happy Earth Month. Forgive my voice as I'm recovering from a cold, but I wanted to pop in and reshare what is quite possibly one of my favorite all-time episodes. I talked with Francisca Troutman a few years ago about her work recycling glass in New Orleans and turning it into sand to be put back on beaches. It continues to be one of my favorite conversations I've ever had on this podcast, and I think it's appropriate to reshare during Earth Month as we are all about highlighting people who are doing the most for the planet. Enjoy. Good Together listeners, I am so excited to welcome Francisca Troutman to the podcast today. She is the co-founder, co-director, and resident chemical engineer at Glass Half Full in New Orleans. So excited to have you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes. Yeah, so Francisca, I wonder if you can just give the audience a little bit of a background, like introduce yourself and kind of let them know what you're working on.
Definitely. So I am from a small town in Louisiana. It's called Cairn Crow. You've probably never heard of it. But I went to Tulane for college, which is where I met my co-founder, Max. And throughout college in New Orleans, you know, we had always heard about how frustrating it is for people not to be able to recycle glass. You know, we experienced it ourselves. And so one night over a bottle of wine that came in a glass bottle that we knew sadly would end up in a landfill, we kind of cracked this idea of recycling glass into sand and a resource that we could use locally in New Orleans. So instead of having to toss all our glass in the trash like we were used to, we could just start something, however small that may be, and convert that glass into a resource.
That's so interesting. And yes, probably most listeners won't be as familiar with, you know, Louisiana, but I'd be curious to know. So I am slightly familiar. My husband has some family in Covington. So we go out and visit every once in a while. But how did the like location, you know, specifically Louisiana, we get so many questions actually on our podcast from people who say, look, I live in an area that's not really served by a lot of recycling facilities. And it's really difficult for me to actually make sure that my, you know, glass or aluminum or et cetera is actually getting recycled. So tell me a little bit about like how that geographic location actually sparked this idea.
Yeah. So growing up in a small town in Louisiana, I also did not have access to recycling services. I didn't have curbside recycling. My family would have to drive, you know, 20, 30 minutes away and drop it off somewhere. And even after that, you know, like your listeners were saying, it's hard to determine, you know, what's actually happening to those recyclables and where are those materials going? Are they actually being recycled? And so that's something we've always wanted to combat at Glass Half Full, is like showing people that we're actually recycling your glass. We're turning it into something. You can come and see that and feel that. But getting back to the geographical thing, so, you know, we were situated in New Orleans at Tulane, and New Orleans is a place like no other. It's filled with community. And it's a, it's just a place where there's so much community that we had a feeling that it could really work here. And so we started, you know, with a GoFundMe. It had to be like a crowdfunding campaign to get the community involved and get the community behind it. And it's just been such a beautiful experience to see all the different types of people who want to get involved, who want to help, who want to give us their time or their money or their resources to help get this off the ground. And I think it had to start in New Orleans. Obviously, we have a lot of plans to expand to other areas in Louisiana and maybe even throughout the US, but New Orleans was just the perfect place to start because of that strong community.
Yeah, I love that. I love that story. And the reason why I brought it up, you know, in addition to the questions that we get from listeners, is I really do believe it's hard for people to understand how recycling and, you know, waste reduction is often a question of accessibility. You know, and the reason why I say it's hard for a lot of people to understand, because if you're coming from a suburb where you just throw stuff out on your curb all the time, like it doesn't even cross your mind that some areas in the United States and around the world don't have this type of access, right? Like I grew up in an area like that. Like, I mean, I was recycled my whole life. We just put it out to the curb, didn't think one thing about it. And so, you know, just as we're able to take people out of that mindset, it's so powerful, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So expanding on that, like, tell me a little bit about what actually happens to your recycling once it, you know, leaves the curb or, like, you know, is at a facility. Because I saw on your Glass Half Full website that a single piece of glass in your recycling bin in New Orleans will cause the entire load to be sent to the landfill where it's never going to be able to decompose. So tell me a little bit about that process.
Yeah, so recycling in general in most cities in the U.S. is single stream. So you're putting everything into one bin, which can cause a lot of issues, especially when you introduce glass into that bin with your paper, with your plastic, your cardboard, your aluminum. Glass can become a really kind of dangerous contaminant. You know, it gets broken, it can be sharp. So it's hard for facilities to then separate that material out, which is why a lot of major cities have stopped collecting glass altogether in their single stream recycling, because it can cause so many issues. And that's why they have all these dramatic rules. Like if we see or hear glass, we're not bringing that to the recycling facility, because they won't take it, because it can cause so many issues in that separation process.
And so, you know, I think something that you've brought up that's really interesting for listeners to keep in mind is, yeah, like the facility that is around your local area, if there is one, there is not a standard across the United States by any means. So, you know, certain facilities will have the ability to recycle different types of materials compared to others. This is one way that, like, we've talked so much about single-use plastic on this podcast before, but this is one way that single-use plastic is super problematic, because oftentimes the company that produces it or the company that, like, uses it in their packaging will say, oh, this is recyclable, just, like, chuck it out. Well, what they fail to tell you is it's only recyclable. First of all, you have to, like, you know, flip it over, look for the number of, the number on the recycling symbol. And just because it says that it can be recycled does not necessarily mean it can be recycled in your facility. And honestly, odds are that it's probably not going to be, right? And that's where we talk about the concept of wish cycling and stuff too. So it's almost a mindset shift. I'm curious to know, Fran, like, so as you guys are having this conversation over this bottle of wine, like, how much information did you know about recycling before you decided to start your business?
That's a great question. And it's something that I hope inspires other people to take action in their community, because we did not know anything. I mean, we thought we knew something, you know, about recycling. We knew just the tip of the iceberg. Like, we had no prior knowledge or experience in recycling or waste. You know, I knew, like, okay, there's different numbers of plastics and that means different things, but that was about the extent of my knowledge, you know. The more we got into this, the more we researched, the more we learned. That's really how we got all of the knowledge that we have today, is just through experience and action and talking to people and just learning more along the way. So that's something I always hope to tell, especially young people, because everyone thinks, oh, well, I didn't even study sustainability in college. How can I, like, run a sustainable business or organization? And it's like, you don't need to. You can learn things along the way, and just be comfortable in, like, what you do know.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, there's so many different facets to owning a business or organization, like you were just talking about. So, like, you're right. Like, you might not be the scientist, but you might have a really great knack for running a business, and then you hire a scientist or whatever. I mean, there's just so many different ways that we can all contribute, to your point. So I totally agree that we should not feel like we have to like self-impose these rules on, you know, like we don't right. need to be doing that, right? Yeah, no, that's fascinating. Okay, so bring me through the timeline. So you guys were in school, had this idea, then what happened? You did your crowdfunding campaign, is that right? Or how did things go from that perspective?
Yeah, so we were seniors in college in our second semester. So it was about January of 2020 when we kind of cracked this idea, came up with this plan. And yeah, the first roadblock was we don't have any money. So we started to GoFundMe. And then the second roadblock was we don't have anywhere to put this glass or, you know, crush it down and turn it into sand. And so we utilized the backyard of Max's fraternity house. Wow. So we were very, we used everything.
Scrappy. Double entendre with that word.
Yes, exactly. So we functioned out of that backyard for about 4 or 5 months. We used the GoFundMe money to purchase an initial, like very small glass recycling machine. It just crushed up glass into sand. And functioned out of that backyard like through the intense like start of COVID. And then by about June of 2020, someone donated a warehouse for us to rent for, I think he gave us like 4 months free, wow. This like very small warehouse. And we quickly filled that up with glass. We always had this problem of like too much glass coming in and so much demand. We couldn't really keep up with all of the glass that people wanted to recycle. Like the community was really, really excited about it. And so by August of 2020, we moved into a huge facility, that the one that we're currently in now, which is like 40,000 square feet.
That's amazing. I love to hear it. And I mean, it's just the classic startup story. I mean, we have a similar one with Brightly, and you know, it's just really, I think, so rewarding as an entrepreneur and a builder to be able to go from like truly your backyard into something yes. bigger, especially when you're doing it from a social impact and like, you know, true good for the world experience. So I love that story. And as you're talking, it kind of got the wheels turning in my head a little bit. So like, tell me a little bit about like what the glass recycling process looks like, because as somebody who knows a little bit about it, in my head, I'm like, oh no, what happens to the labels? Do people have to give you the glass without the labels? So like, tell me a little bit, okay, you have a big pile of glass in a warehouse. Now, how do you actually recycle it?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's something that keeps a lot of people up at night. I get so many TikToks about yeah. like, wait, what is happening to the labels?
Yeah.
And it actually does feel like magic, but essentially we have a pulverizing kind of like system. And so it consists of a hopper, a conveyor belt, hammers that crush the glass, a trommel screen. And so within that system, it's actually a patented process. So I don't know exactly how it works. It seems like magic.
That's but cool.
Because the glass is hitting against itself, the machine is able to only crush the glass into small pieces. And it leaves metal caps, you know, plastic, any plastic bottles, any aluminum cans, and labels as larger pieces. And so then through the trommel screen, like the sifting process, all of the non-glass pieces will be separated from the glass pieces. And so what's left is a mixture of sand and gravel made from glass. And then we have another kind of offshoot that's basically like more of like a trash chute, okay. which is the caps, the corks, the labels, yeah. and all of that.
Awesome. No, that's so interesting. And I feel like, yeah, a lot of people, you know, you hear like best practices where somebody will say, okay, well, if you put glass in the recycling bin, you have to scrub the labels off yourself, blah, blah, blah. And like, obviously, if everybody did that, it might make someone's life a little bit easier. But like, that's just not realistic, right? Like most people don't have time to do it. And who knows if they'd even be effective at doing it. So obviously, there are ways that you just talked about that are done en masse. But another question that people ask us, and I'm sure you get on TikTok all the time, which we're going to talk about TikTok in a second. But what people ask me all the time, like, well, what happens if I didn't clean it out correctly? You know, like, what if it's a spaghetti jar and I left some sauce in there? Like, what do you tell people then?
Yeah, Yeah, in general, that is okay. Organic matter is like not a huge issue for us. We use the glass sand in the environment. So like spaghetti sauce isn't going to make a huge difference. But we do have a sort of like screening process for when we collect the glass. So we collect it through a drop-off program as well as a pickup program. So if there is anything like super funky or weird, we will take it out and like do something with it, either clean it ourselves or just toss it if it's too far gone. But in general, most things that people are worried about, like limes in their Corona beer, it's totally, not an issue for us. It'll either get crushed up or like separated in the sifting process that I just talked about.
Oh, so good. So yeah, I mean, so there we go, listeners. If you've ever had anxiety about this, like I have too, Freyna's just told us that it's probably okay, at least in her facility. And so really good to know, because I'm sure you get that all the time. And actually, so that kind of brings me to the next point I wanted to make was, I mean, we actually found about you and Glass Half Full through TikTok. Brightly also has had, you know, a lot of really cool conversations and community building happening on TikTok. And so I mean, who knows? But we probably saw you on a hashtag or like the For You page, who knows? But then we just really fell in love with like your storytelling perspective. But tell me a little bit about like, how has TikTok played a role in the growth that you've seen with your business? And then maybe tell me a little bit about like the community building aspect.
Absolutely. And, you know, I touched on the local New Orleans community aspect earlier about how the community really just came together to support us in any way that they could, which was such a beautiful thing to see. And then we found the exact same type of community on TikTok. It was really so incredible. And I owe it all to my co-founder, Max, because he was the one, it was like June of 2020. He was the one who was like, I think we should make a TikTok video. And I was like, Max, I think we're too old for TikTok. And we were like 20, we were like 22 at the time.
And you still thought you were too old. Oh my God.
Yeah. It was just like that era of TikTok where it was like dancing videos and you didn't really know, you know, if there was potential there, but Max saw the potential. And I'm so glad that he did, because now TikTok is just one of our biggest tools for getting the word out there, growing this community, inspiring other people to take action in their community. It's just been such an incredible journey.
Yeah. I mean, and honestly, the way you film things is so interesting. And I think just again, giving people the behind the scenes look at what is possible, number one, like from a recycling perspective, from grassroots perspective, like you talked about earlier, it's such a cool thing to see. So listeners, if you haven't had a chance to check out Fran's TikTok presence, we'll talk a little bit about it at the end of the episode where you can find her, but totally, totally recommend it. And one of the things I love about TikTok is the ability to, you know, get comments from people and engage in sort of the question and answer or maybe the duet experience. So tell me a little bit more about like, what are some other questions? I mean, I'm sure you guys get so many comments and DMs. Like, what are some of the top questions people are asking you on TikTok and on social?
One of the banes of my existence on TikTok is when we go viral, there are always so many questions about if the glass sand is sharp. Like, will it cut me?
Oh.
Is it gonna hurt? Is it sharp? That is the top question that we get anytime we go viral. And it's so funny because the people who have been following me or Glass Half Full for a while, they'll like chime in before I even chime in. They're like, no,
it's fine.
Yeah, like she's done so many tests. Like I've walked on it multiple times. I like squeeze it. I like rub it in between my hands. I do so many like video tests for people to like put them at ease that it is not sharp. It is a rounded sand product. We've actually done like analyses on the angularity and roundness of our sand versus native sand. It's like the same. So it's like no sharper than sand at the beach or like sand that you'll find anywhere else. But that is like the top question that I get. It's just like, I don't know how to appease everyone.
Well, it's crazy too. Cause you're like, okay, am I going to have to go back? Are we going to have to go back to high school science class? Or probably not even, it's probably like elementary science class where like, folks, glass is sand. right? Like, you know, it's basically been melted down and transformed on a chemical basis.
Right.
So like, folks, don't worry. Like, it's the same thing. That's yeah. so funny. I love it. What else do they ask you?
Yeah. Another pretty popular question that we get is in terms of, do we plan to expand to other cities? Can we teach people how to do this in their hometown or their city? Are we franchising? That's something that we get asked a lot. And it's actually the most difficult question for us to answer because we have such a strong desire to bring this to other places and to either franchise or teach people how to do it, to show people. But the issue is that we are not experts. You know, like I said, we started from nothing and we're still figuring this out ourselves. You know, we don't know the exact right model yet. We're still trying to figure that out. And then when you take it to a whole nother community, a whole nother environment, it's going to be totally different, right? So it's such a complicated answer that I want to be able to give people the answer to, but it's just going to take more time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that makes sense. And, you know, it's kind of like what you talked about earlier, which is running an organization, whether it's a business or nonprofit, there's just so many different things that go on behind the scenes that I think unless you've been there, you don't really understand. And so, yes, people are like, on the one hand, they're like, hey, I want to do this in my neighborhood. Tell me how to do it and I'll get started. And you're like, well, wait a second. Like is this a franchise? Is this, there's just so many things that go into it. There's legal stuff. Like I can't count the amount of times I've had to put on my lawyer hat. Like there's just so many things that go into it. And so, you know, we're definitely speaking the same language here, but I think, of course it's always good to have community demand and have people asking you for things. And so that's a good proof of concept, especially if you're going to go out and do an investor pitch or something. Like all of that is always really awesome and exciting to know, but oftentimes it can be really hard to scale up behind the scenes. And so, yeah, I mean, you kind of talked about this now, but you guys are still figuring it out, right? Like, are you looking to bring somebody onto the team to help you do that? Or are you just trying to figure out what your next steps are? Like, tell me a little bit about how you see the future of the company right now.
Yeah, I'd love to. So at this point we are recycling anywhere from 50 to 75 tons of glass per month. Right. So that it seems like a lot, you know, it's 150,000 pounds. But in reality, there's so much more glass out there in just New Orleans alone. And then on top of that, you know, we're in a state with no other glass recycling. So there's so many other major cities in Louisiana that also need glass recycling as well as, you know, I'll never forget my little, you know, hometown and small towns as well. And so there's just so much glass to be recycled. So like I said, we're recycling about 50 to 75 tons a month. We, in the very near future, within a year, are working on purchasing a machine that would allow us to recycle, you know, 50 to 75 tons a day. So that's increasing our processing capacity, our ability to recycle by so, so much. Wow. But of course, the price tag on that machine is roughly $1 million. So it's, you know, that it's a plan. It's something we know that we're going to get done. It's just a matter of, you know, getting that funding, finding impact investors or applying for grants in order to make that happen. But that's the scale that we're striving for.
Awesome. Well, that's so exciting to hear because like I said, I know that you guys have just started to scratch the surface with your, you know, efforts and what the potential could be for your business. That's really cool. So I guess I'm trying to think, let me go through. Here's a good question for you. This is one that I had jotted down earlier and we hadn't had a chance to get to it yet, which is from a community advice perspective, what is your advice to people who aren't living in your, you know, area, New Orleans, and who they don't have access to glass recycling initiatives? Do you have any advice for them? What should they do?
Yeah, that's a complicated question. Yeah. It's also a question I get a lot on TikTok. Like, yeah. I don't have glass recycling, or even folks who are like, I don't know if the glass in my area is actually being recycled. Like, I don't know what's happening to it.
Interesting. Yeah.
And to everyone, I would say, don't be afraid to reach out to your sanitation department, to whoever handles waste and recycling in your area, and just ask them, say, okay, if the glass is collected, say, where is the glass going? What's happening to the glass? If the glass is not collected, say, why isn't the glass collected?
Yeah.
And they'll probably reply with something like, oh, it's a money problem. And then maybe you're in a position to offer help. You know, maybe there are infrastructure grants being given out to cities. There actually are like glass recycling grants being given out to municipalities to get recycling programs going. And so just get involved in that process of figuring out, you know, maybe you're not ready to start an entire business like me and my co-founder did, but you can still help along the way however you can and make some noise to tell people that you do want glass recycling in your area.
That's so cool. I love that. And then one more question about, like, you know, your business, and then I'll ask you the same question we ask everybody at the very end of the podcast, but one more question, which is like, where is the sand going? I think I forgot to ask you that. Where does that sand go?
Yes, I do think we forgot to touch on this at the beginning. So we recycle glass into sand. That sand is mainly used for disaster relief in New Orleans. So sandbags to prevent houses against flooding and hurricanes, and then coastal restoration. So we've done over a year of research with the National Science Foundation, as well as Tulane University scientists and engineers, determining the safety and the feasibility of using recycled glass sand in coastal restoration. And I'm happy to say that all of the research is going so well. It's really positive. Everything's looking good. As you would expect, like you said, glass is sand. Sand is glass. so we didn't expect anything too crazy, but, you know, just covering our bases and double checking everything. And so we've already implemented 2 coastal restoration projects, and we hope to implement even more in the next couple months and years.
That's amazing. Well, there we go. We figured out where the sand went, everybody. So I'm sure you're listening to this episode like, why did she not ask where the sand goes? So don't worry. I got you. I got you. Okay. So Fran, last question for you, which is, you know, we ask this to everybody that comes onto Good Together, but it's so interesting to think about it from your perspective, which is, from your point of view, what is exciting you the most about what you're seeing going on in this new sort of ethical and sustainable lifestyle movement?
Ooh, that is a great question. The most exciting thing that I'm seeing about this movement is everyone getting involved. Truly, like, at every level, especially young people, but also older people as well. You know, I always think about how when I was young, my grandmother still is and was such a stickler for recycling, like cleaned all of her cans, all of her glass, all of her plastic. And it's like coming back around again. So we truly have everyone involved and kind of listening in on how they can be more sustainable and how they can be more ethical in their lives. And it's just such a beautiful thing to see. I mean, especially for me at our glass recycling drop-off, I just see every type of person bringing me their glass, you know, rich, poor, old, young, like literally like toddlers coming, you know, with their parents' wine bottles. And it's just a beautiful thing to see people really getting involved on all levels.
That's so exciting. Well, Fran, this has been such a fun conversation. Listeners, if you're not already familiar with what they're doing at Glass Half Full, you're definitely going to be familiar now. We'll include links in our show notes, but just really have enjoyed the conversation. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us on another episode of Good Together. To get show notes and more, head to brightly.eco/podcast. Finally, don't forget to join in on the conversation with us on social media. You'll find us on almost everything at brightly.eco. Don't forget, we're all on this journey together, so have fun putting the planet first and stay curious.